Australia seeks to be a light on the hill and to lend a hand wherever it can. Tony Abbott borrowed the words of Labor Prime Minister Ben Chifley when he addressed the United Nations General Assembly overnight. He said Australia had a small population, but its wealth made it big enough to be useful. He also took aim at Russia and said Australia will use its time as chair of the G20 to promote private sector-led economic growth. The Prime Minister joins us from New York. Well, Tony Abbott, you were critical of Kevin Rudd's ambitious plans on the world stage. You've told the UN Australia will lend a hand wherever it can. Do you run the risk of overreach?
Well, it's very important that we do what is in our national interests. And obviously, it was in our national interest that we take a very strong position on MH17 a couple of months back. And now it's in our national interest that we play our part in the fight against the murderous death cult ISIL, because this isn't just something that's happening in the Middle East. It's something that's reaching out to Australia. As you know, there are at least 60 Australians that are currently fighting with ISIL and other terrorist groups. There's at least 100 Australians supporting them. There's well over 60 who've had their passports cancelled lest they go abroad to join ISIL. And unfortunately, toxicity in the Middle East is reaching out to our country and it's doing bad things at home. That's why it's important that this be done as part of our national security effort.
Are you prepared for this fight to last for years, as our own Chief of Army believes it will?
We've been concerned about terrorism for well over a decade already, as you know, Chris. I suppose the September the 11th atrocity alerted the world to the readiness of misguided people to kill in the name of God. I think that the latest explosion of fanaticism is alerting people all around the world, in all religions and in all cultures, that it's never right to kill in the name of God, to mistreat people in the name of God. But that message will take some time to sink in.
And surely the message to us, though, is if what we've been doing for the last decade hasn't been working, doing more of it may not work also.
I can't give an absolute categoric assurance that we will never see a successful terror incident in Australia, but I can give a categoric assurance, Chris, that we have very, very professional, world-equaling, police, security and intelligence services, and they are constantly vigilant.
When will Australia's fighter jets join the action in Iraq?
Well, the government needs to make a final decision to commit them to combat operations over Iraq. This is a matter that will be considered in coming days. Obviously, we've deployed them to the Middle East, along with special forces that can act as military advisers, because we thought they might be necessary. And it's clear that more and more countries are committing to some form of military action to support the Iraqi government, to disrupt and degrade the ISIL movement. The Dutch government has just agreed to commit up to 8 of their F-16s, and we saw 5 Middle Eastern countries join the United States in airstrikes on ISIL targets in Syria just the other day.
So you've deployed these troops, these fighter jets. Your intention is to commit them?
Well, we didn't send them there for merely an exercise. We sent them there in readiness to deploy them. But obviously, it's important to do so as part of a coalition. That coalition clearly is assembling, and the government will be making further decisions in coming days.
Hundreds of thousands of Kurdish refugees are pouring across the Turkish border, 144,000 in 6 days. They're coming out of Syria. That's where the main fight is. Will you take Australia's fight there?
It's not within our current intentions, Chris.
Current intentions?
I certainly don't rule it out. Morally, there's a little difference between ISIL, this death cult, on one side of the border to the other, because it's a border that ISIL doesn't recognise. But legally, and the Australian government must be conscious of these things because we are a law-abiding country, legally there's a world of difference between operating inside Iraq in support of and at the request of the Iraqi government and operating in Syria, which is largely ungoverned space with a regime that Australia doesn't actually recognise.
And if you are going to win the fight in Syria, the only viable partner there is the government of Bashar al-Assad.
Look, I'm not in the business of disputing the statement you've just made, but, Chris, what we have in mind is combat operations in Iraq, not elsewhere. Obviously, what other countries do, what other governments do, is a matter for them. We are determined to do what we reasonably and prudently and proportionately can at home and abroad to combat this terror menace.
At home, Prime Minister, what is your latest advice on what the threat is to Australia?
Well, it's high. We raised the terror threat level on the advice of our expert agencies a couple of weeks ago now. I hope it doesn't go up, but obviously we rely on expert advice, and as I've said repeatedly, we will do what's necessary to keep our community safe. But the other point I keep making is that we've got to have a sense of perspective about all things, even things as alarming as this can be, and Australians need to just go about their business normally. We don't want terrorists to frighten us out of being ourselves, because that would be to give the terrorists a victory.
Will there be more arrests?
As you know, Chris, the big raids that were conducted last week did net a lot of evidence. That evidence is being sifted to see what it turns up. Let's not preempt what happens, but anyone who is breaking Australian law will feel the weight of the law. That's what people expect of government, and that's certainly what we intend to deliver.
Liberal Senators Corey Bernardi and Dean Smith are pushing for changes to the Racial Discrimination Act, and you decided not to go ahead with those because you feared it might inflame tensions with the Muslim community. What's your message to them?
Well, obviously, backbench members of Parliament are entitled to promote private members' legislation. But yes, I am determined to do everything I can to promote national unity. And I'm also determined to do everything I reasonably can to crack down on the preachers of hate. I don't believe that the advocacy of terrorism is something that really has a place in our society. And that's one of the reasons why, under today's circumstances, which are not the circumstances which we faced 2 or 3 years ago, I decided that it was best not to proceed with our earlier commitment on Section 18C.
Now, you've spoken to Egypt's leader about Peter Grester, the journalist that's been held there for such a long time now. Can you tell us about that conversation?
Well, in broad terms, yes, Chris. I'm not going to go into the detail of who said what to whom, but I think I can say that President al-Sisi is a reluctant jailer here. He wasn't the president when Peter Grester and his colleagues were arrested. He does have to allow Egyptian legal process to run its course. But the impression I have of him is that he is a decent man of good values who appreciates that free, or at least free-ish speech, is very important even in Egypt. And I think he will do his best to be helpful.
Prime Minister, thank you.
Thank you so much.
The Prime Minister, Tony Abbott.